We're kind of in the home stretch here, and step 12 is a step that is covered in masterly detail in chapter 7. I recommend reading, studying chapter 7 before sponsoring. I think chapter 7 is a beautiful chapter. It is the only chapter in the book that is written in the imperative rather than the declarative. It is the only chapter in the book that is very specific about telling you, do this, do that, say this, say that, don't say this, don't say that. It is not without tremendous reason, because it is very, very important that we work step 12, not only for the other person, but for us. It's just extremely, extremely important. There are three parts to step 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. And that means that in order to have a spiritual awakening as the result of the steps, I must have worked those steps. You see people in OA, and you see people in other 12-step programs, I bet, that are trying to carry the message of step nothing. They haven't worked the steps. They have some sort of concept of something, and they're really not in recovery. And so the most important thing that I can remember is, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, I must have worked them. I must be abstinent. I must be in a place of spiritual growth. And this is extremely important. I cannot overemphasize. I'll get to it in just a second. Okay, I'm sorry. Well, let's get to it. I'm sorry.
We're in a group where there's not too many available sponsors, so my opinion and other opinions are to encourage people to work steps to help bring people up to the step they're on, at least. Is that an opinion?
I'm not quite sure about the specifics of where these people are, but I would say that if you have to, and I don't know what the availability of AA people is, because that will usually be the strongest of the groups in any different location is AA. Don't be afraid to go to AA and say, look, we need a little help over here. In early OA, Roseanne went to Clancy I. Roseanne went to AA members and said, we need help over here. We don't have sponsorship. We don't have anybody to take us through the work. And Roseanne employed their help. And in the back of her books, she'll always give a shout out to some of those early AA members that helped them get started. If it wasn't for the help of our AA brothers and sisters who had walked the path before us, we wouldn't have what we have today in OA. So don't be afraid to reach out to those people and say, we need your help over here. We lack adequate sponsorship, and then you'll build the fellowship around you once you're going. Yeah.
I'm hearing you say that really there could be a meld of OA and AA, and like really there is no difference, and we could just go, you know, it could just, or could be one group.
You would lack that identification with the food, but I don't think that if you live in a place that is small and you don't have that leadership, do what you have to do. If they'll take you through the book and get you guys started, don't be afraid to do that. You know, and there's all kinds of resources for reaching out today that didn't exist in the 1930s, the internet and so on. So don't be afraid to ask them for help. It's better to ask them for help than ask the lady at McDonald's to supersize your fries. And those are really the choices, yes.
I have a question about the statement about the we don't ask for ourselves, and other than like for our to have our usefulness increased, or for like to others, or whatnot. Like we never pray to our own selfish ends.
Right.
Now, I have had time stretches of like where I was suffering intense pain or whatnot else physically, and it's damn hard to not pray for your own selfish ends. And if you are dealing with somebody who is like dealing with physical illness that is so severely, I honestly, I went there like, if there, I don't know, and I've been told it's not okay to pray for myself. I'm like, honey, pray.
It depends on my motivation. What I will frequently say is, God, my knee is killing me today. Please alleviate my pain so I can better do your will. So I can better do the footwork and be of better service to you.
Okay, because when they're in so much pain that they can't even think straight, it's like, oh yeah, to tell them, oh no, that's selfish. I'm sorry, that's not selfish. To me, it's kind of, if we can't turn to God as like our friend, then yeah, but I guess if you're
praying for that person, then that's fine. That's totally consistent with the step. If you're praying for that person to be out of pain,
right, but I'm
that's totally
then
fine.
When they pray, like,
let me be out of pain, God, so I can better do your will.
Okay. One thing that I did say is like that I've done for myself was, let me, please take the pain from me, and if you can't, and if I have to have it for some reason or another, please help me deal with it.
Please alleviate my pain so I can better do your will,
okay.
So I can be a better servant of your will.
Okay.
Yes.
I've been coming into the room, I started in June of 2 years ago, 2010. At that time, we didn't have a real established oasis. I went to all my meetings, AA, all of them. And my first sponsor was an AA. She took me through the first 5 steps, which she always said, until you find someone in OA, and we got as far as the 5th step, and then I found someone in OA to take over. But the beauty of that, she was 22 years sober. She knew her steps forwards and backwards. She helped me on the 4th step tremendously. And then I got an OA sponsor, but I am back in recovery again. Like I said, as of April 2nd, but I have to go to 90 days meetings in 90 days, and there's not 90 OA meetings that I can go to. So I go to 5 AA meetings a week and 2 OA meetings a week. So the recovery and the desperation and the God in the rooms of AA are some of the most amazing things I've ever seen. So the recovery and the steps are steps, and they always say, you know, addiction's addiction. Your consequences might be different or in some ways, but I would not make it without it.
And if you're in that situation where you live in a place where there's no strong OA people there to sponsor, don't be afraid to ask the AA people, because they will help you in most cases, and you know, they'll get you started, and then the fellowship will build around you. God will smile on your burgeoning OA community, and all of a sudden you'll see that you're building that fellowship around you. But it really has to start somewhere, and even Roseanne reached out to people like Clancy and different people that spoke at early OA meetings, because you got to remember, they didn't have anybody that had any real recovery, so they had to reach out, and they were in Los Angeles.
Not all AA meetings are open. You have to find an open AA meeting that allows you to call 12 steps.
Yeah, don't go to their closed meeting.
Yeah,
you're not alcoholic.
Be careful with that.
Yeah.
This was just a quick thought, because one of the things that we have talked about is when we have this whole decision and what should I do, and oh my God. One thing that I found incredibly helpful is somebody had mentioned at some point in time that, like, one thing that is a given in my mind, or in, I think lots of people's mind, God wants us to recover. That's a given. That I don't doubt. So when it comes to a decision, like, is what I'm contemplating to do or not to do beneficial or necessary for my recovery? If that's what it's, I mean, granted, if it's like, should it be this brand of bread or that brand of, that might not be as clear cut. That might be kind of case of like just praying for guidance or whatever. But with bigger decisions, will I believe, does God believe that this is beneficial to my recovery?
Even in small decisions, what decision feels better in my heart? What decision, from what kind of clock to buy to what kind of shoes to buy, what decision really feels more peaceful in my soul? And what decision is causing me to try to talk myself into that decision? If I'm talking myself into that decision, that's Harlan. If I'm not, and it's just coming easy, flow, easy peasy. I used to live in Eugene, Oregon. There's the Mackenzie River. Just flows down there, flows down the stream. That's God's decision. When I'm trying to force my way up that river, that's my decision. I'm trying to talk me into making a decision that is not in my best interest. It's my ego's best interest.
You're saying that only if you're in recovery. If you're in active addiction, that free thinking...
I don't have any type of clear channel when I'm loaded up with Raisinets or I'm loaded up with Chunky Bars.
It's not going to work.
When I am loaded up with French fries, I can't make any decision other than to watch who's going to the bathroom, or maybe there's... Did they leave something on there? She'll never know the difference. Boom. In the mouth. Those are the decisions I can make.
So you can only use what you're saying when you're in active recovery.
I can't use it in my illness. I can't be trusted in my illness. I just cannot be trusted. Okay. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics. There's an old expression that what you're doing is screaming so loudly, I cannot hear what you're saying. We are all carrying a message, whether you want to carry one or you don't. Carry this message, not your message, not my message, this message. When I was in relapse, I have 13 years of abstinence and my daughter is 17 years of age. You can do the math yourself. When my daughter was about 2 years old, we were living in Eugene, Oregon, and it was an August day, it was a Sunday, and my wife had just got in with a major, major grocery store run, and my daughter at two was in her diaper, and my wife, then wife, were back to back in our kitchen in Eugene, Oregon. And you know how when they're just not quite, first of all, you just want to eat them. They've got the little pudgy arms. She used to say to me, you can't kiss me all the time. But I have to. I can't help it. And she didn't like when I would call her Yiddish names when her friends would come over later. She didn't like that at all. But anyway, back to the story. So now she's 2 years old. Not quite two, and she's standing back to back with my wife in the kitchen, and I'm in total relapse when we went there. I am now almost 400 pounds again, and I am back in the throes of the illness, and I am just absolutely four sheets to the wind, insane. My then beautiful, sweet baby, now she's 17, but she took her little hand... She took her little hand and she took the refrigerator handle and she opened it and she said, turned around, she says, shit, Esther, there's nothing in here. If looks could kill, I would have been vaporized. We are carrying a message whether we want to carry one or we don't want to be carrying one. And there is a message that we are carrying, and there is a message that we are transmitting, and don't fool your intentions with your reality. People are seeing the reality, not your intentions. And I was carrying a message to that little girl of opening up the refrigerator and saying that to my wife. And that is what she was picking up. When she was four, not quite four, she turned four in December, but in October when she was four, she was enrolled in a nursery school called the Big Little School in Eugene, Oregon, and she was crying. It was a Wednesday, and she would not come out of the back seat of my wife's car. I got home from work every day at 3:30. I came home, I backed into the garage, and my daughter is in the back seat of my wife's car crying, and she will not come out. My wife says, I need to speak to you. What's the matter? Hannah will not come out of the car until you promise that you will not go to the spaghetti dinner at the Big Little School because she doesn't want the other teachers and the other kids and parents to see how fat you are. I agreed, and that Friday night was three of the loneliest hours of my life. The pain and the torture and the embarrassment and the shame that my parents heaped on me I was heaping on this little girl. Well, that's about as down as I'm going. On December the 14th that year, she turned 4, and on December the 29th of that year, I started 13 years of current back-to-back abstinence. Thanks. When we moved to Arizona, we had a very nice house. And we had a family room in the house. And remember, the little girl who opened up the refrigerator was 2. Now when we moved to Arizona, she is now 7. Right? Second grade, fifth, 5 is kindergarten, 6 is first. She's 7 years old. We moved to Arizona. I have now been in recovery for 3 years. I was watching a situation comedy which premiered on one of the networks about a man who was walking around with a list and making apology to people that he had done bad things to in his life. My daughter came into the room where I was watching the show. Again, hotter than hell that day. It was like September. It was like 182 or something. And she looked around, and she was looking for something to draw with or something, and she looked around, and she looked at the TV screen, and she looked back at me and said, "Well, he's just doing his 8th and 9th step, right, Dad?" That's how far she had come. That's where she had come in the different messages that I sent her between, "Shit, Esther, there's nothing in here," to, "He's just doing his 8th and 9th step, right, Dad?" Because I had become a different person, because I was sending out a different message. I never said anything to my daughter about recovery or about anything like that. I didn't 12-step my daughter. I didn't do any of those things. She picked up what she picked up because that is what I was transmitting. We tried to carry this message. Now, you're sitting here and you're going to go back into the world in just a little bit here. I want you to understand how much I appreciate your bravery for coming here. There's a lot of reasons not to have come. It's Father's Day. Sunday, it's this, it's that. You guys live in an area where summer is very precious because it's very fleeting, and once the winter comes, it's a different thing. There are people who are not here, both that come to the rooms and don't. There is horrific pain out there. There is horrific loneliness out there. There is horrific fear out there. And there is pain beyond measurability from this illness. And there are people out there who have been summarily rejected by the people in their lives closest to them because of their obese condition. And they have prayed for themselves, "Please, God, make me thin or kill me. I cannot stop eating." They've tried Weight Watchers, and they've tried TOPS and Nutrisystems. Some of them have had bariatric surgeries that have had to be reversed because they ate through them. Some of them have had lap band surgeries that had to be removed in the middle of the night because of emergencies stemming from them cramming too much food in there. Some of them have been medicated and put on speed, and some of them have had all manner of absolute lunacy in their life because of this illness. There are husbands out there ostracizing their wives. There are wives out there ostracizing their husbands or children because of an obese condition that they hate, and no one understands it. And so that the person that suffers from it has condemned themselves And maybe, just maybe, one day, they will come in and you'll see them waiting in the car to see what we look like, what goes on in these meetings. And maybe on a Tuesday night in Anchorage or Homer or wherever, they will throw themselves together and maybe put on a dress or put on a pair of pants, and they'll come into that meeting and they're broken. You can give them something that they can't get at the bariatric center. They can't get this at Weight Watchers. They can't get it at Tops. You can give them something they've never got before. You can give them identification and hope. And you can pass it one to the next, that maybe you were, that they sat down next to you and maybe you had the crap beat out of you by your husband too. Maybe you were raped too. Maybe you were molested too. Maybe you were fired for the obese condition by the very person that you trained for the damn job 9 years ago, and he or she is the one that's going to fire you because you're obese. You think I'm just making that up? You're out of your mind. It's every day. It's every day. Lives cut short. Lives who, there's people that live in this paradise that can't get out of the house because they're scared to death of what they look like and who they are and what they'll do and what people are going to say to them. I used to go into public with my heart in my mouth, what kids would say to me and adults would say to me. My God in heaven, the obese American is the last bastion of ostracizable human being in the world. You can say the ugliest thing to that person. You can do the ugliest thing to that person, and it's okay because it's for their own good. No, it's not okay. There is pain beyond measurability. And you can sit in the meeting, and if you don't know what to say to that person, you don't know what to do for that person, you don't know anything else, you can stick your hand out and say, "Hi, I'm Harlan, welcome. Would you like me to get you a big book? Joe is going to be our speaker tonight. How are you? How did you find us?" You can exercise love and tolerance of others. You can make them feel welcome. And maybe, just maybe, maybe you can send them home the one night of their adult life with something they've never had before. Hope. Hope. That maybe if you could recover from this vicious illness that doesn't care who it kills, that maybe they can too. And maybe they'll go home with an image of sitting next to a woman with a brown shirt or a hoodie, a blue hoodie, that talked about things that they believed were secret unto them. I have sat in rooms with men and women who have suffered pain beyond recognition, and so have you. And you are one of those people, but you right now are a survivor. If you paid attention to nothing this weekend, go back into the world with this responsibility, that to the world you're a person. To that person you can be the world. You can light them up, give them hope. That may be your purpose for being here. That there is an unbroken chain between a series of improbable, impossible, unbelievable occurrences that occurred in Sweden between a man named Roland and his psychiatrist, Dr. Jung, and a man who in New York City named Ebbe Thatcher, who brought a message to Bill Wilson that Roland got from Dr. Jung about the spiritual experience. Step one comes from Silkworth, step two comes from Jung, the rest come from Oxford Group. An unbroken chain of improbable, impossible, unbelievable occurrences, so that one day somehow that message got to Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob and Jimmy Burwell and Clarence Snyder and Archie Throwbridge and Earl Teets and Hank Parkhurst and all the first 100. And one day a guy by the name of Jim Willis, who had a gambling problem, and he wanted to start an organization where gamblers could come and identify that were not alcoholic. And he started Gamblers Anonymous. And then one day in 1958, Roseanne S. and Marvin and their friend attended a meeting of GA. And Roseanne said to Jim, "Do you think a program like yours would help someone like me?" And he said, "You know, Roseanne, I don't see why not." And it began in 1960. And A.G. Ainsworth and Roseanne and Maxine R., who just lost her husband down in Los Angeles. And the chain moved. The chain moved delicately, delicately, and one day it got to you. Don't snuff it out. It glows better when we put our fires together. Don't snuff it out. They may not remember what you say to them. They will remember how you made them feel. They will remember how you made them feel. And to practice these principles, what are the principles in all of our affairs? To practice these principles is the steps in all of the things in our lives, from every decision to everything about my life, to all the things from business to everything. Now, the easiest place for me to practice these principles is here in OA. I love you. Maybe you love me. Maybe you don't. If you don't, Paula. But this is the easiest place to practice these principles. The harder place is in the business world, in the office, in the business world, where things start colliding around with money and prestige and position. The hardest of all places to work this is in the home. Now, I'm no longer married, unfortunately, but when I was, and hopefully maybe one day I will be again with somebody, I don't know what God has in store for me, but if I'm not careful, I will treat complete strangers that I meet at the grocery store or the gas station or God knows where, I will treat complete strangers with more love and more tolerance and more friendliness than I'll treat my own wife or my own child in my own home. It shouldn't be that way. It doesn't have to be that way. And if I practice these steps and treat that person with love and respect, and perhaps they will do that with me, whatever time I have left will be good. Will be good times. And if I don't, it becomes a battleground. It becomes miserable. It just becomes horrible. And these are the things that are the embodiment of step 12. Let's go to the step 12 promises on page 100. Both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of 100. Both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. And this has been my experience in OA from the very beginning, that seeing other people progress, seeing other people come in broken, seeing other people come in and get it and catch fire, and for them to pass it to someone else is great happiness. Food has given me pleasure. Other things have given me momentary pleasures. Nothing has given me the kind of happiness in seeing people grow who came in so broken, so ill from this illness, and to watch them flourish and watch them pass it to others. Before we close, I just want to say from the bottom of my heart, thank you. I have been permanently touched by the fulfillment of a dream. I read a book when I was a kid by Walter Hickel, and I always wanted to come to Alaska. I've always wanted to come, especially, you know, of course, with what's been going on politically, you know, lately. But I've always wanted to go to Alaska. Now, I always saw myself petting an otter or something, but not doing this. But I've always wanted to come here. And whatever I see of it in the next day or don't see of it, because I am tired, whatever I see of it or don't see of it, the most beautiful thing I could have seen in Alaska, I did, and that is your faces. And it's been my honor and privilege and pleasure to have been able to break bread with you when we're not in the meetings over the last few days, getting to know some of you as little as I've been able to get to know you in just the time we've had has touched my heart very deeply. Again, I've never seen a group of people as passionate about their home as the people here. I sincerely hope, I'm not going to cry, I told you, I'm not going to cry. I sincerely hope that as time goes on and you see that there is an OA birthday or a convention, the convention next year is in Cleveland, Ohio, that you will take an opportunity to come, that, you know, and I'm hoping selfishly, and I am going to pray for my own selfish ends here, I'm hoping selfishly that our paths will cross again. And I know that if you do, I put my name and number on there, and I will remember you. You know, you may have to jar me a little bit, but I will remember you. But the bottom line is, this being here is the fulfillment of a lifelong dream to see Alaska. I couldn't have seen anything more beautiful than your faces, and I am honored and touched. Again, if I've said anything to offend you, Paula Kay's number is on there, and you can contact her. I hope that God will see fit to cross our paths, and I will pray for your recovery, and I'm so happy to have been here. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. I'm on 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourselves to God as you understand God. Steps 1, 2, and 3. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. 4, 5, 6, 7. Clear away the wreckage of your past. 8, 9. Give freely of what you find. Steps 10, 11, and 12, and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you so much for allowing me to be up here with you this weekend. I will never forget it, and bless your hearts. Thanks.
Got that.